Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Does it tame and tame and tame again?
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
Walking the disciplinary tightrope with Professor Jonathan Van Tam, the weirdest use of For My Sins yet. Will English football ever embrace the word zero? Shuffling the commentary pack with Amazon Prime Video. When is it too early to take one for the team with a red card? When Ali McCoy sees a high-caliber former player in the stands, Claudio Taffarel arriving 25 years too late, and a potential terrestrial TV football record. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 117 of the Football Clichés podcast. I'm Adam Hurry. With me, first of all, he's the cock of the walk, it's David Walker. How's it going?
Yeah, very good. Very good. Just about recovered from our evening at the Football Supporters Association Awards.
Fruitless yeah. Evening. But that's fine. Good to be there.
And congratulations to Max Rushton and Barry Glendenning and the rest of the Guardian team.
I thought they'd done enough congratulating on their own. I didn't think they need any more. So, but yes, well done indeed. Alongside us is Charlie Eccleshare. He's back from the frozen tundra of Turf Moor. Just wanted to say tundra. Good fun.
Tundra is a great word. Only David Attenborough, I think, is really allowed to say it. Mm. But it is a great word. It was great fun. And I did, as I tweeted the snow beating down, I was like, it's not right, is it? But it's so cold. My hands feel like they're about to fall off. And I've started this tweet. I'm just going to finish it. I did think, that's not really the most juiced. And had I had a bit more time and it'd been a bit less cold, I would have probably pored over it more like I do most of my tweets. I've learned a lesson.
Yeah, if only there was a precipitation clichés podcast.
I know.
But so you're safe. The fact that you didn't reply to my tweet, I thought, I've really pissed him off this time. Yeah, I've done it.
I was more
patience for this.
No, it was more like, yeah, well, at that time I was like shivering and yeah. I probably couldn't really have replied even if I wanted to.
Fair enough.
No, it was more prompted some soul searching.
Okay, well, you're in safe, warm hands now because I've got some content to really fill your heart with glee. Let's start with very familiar territory. Charlie, he's done it again. He's done it again. Jonathan Van Tam, he's done it again.
So to me, and as you know, I love football. We started with 11 players in the team with the Wuhan vaccine. And you could say that we've kind of picked up a couple of injuries when Alpha came along and then Delta came along. Those variants that are slightly different from the Wuhan original strain. And we've had to use our subs off the bench to keep us in the game, but we're well in the game. And you can see that with the current epidemiology in relation to Delta, that the vaccines are holding up very well and largely keeping us out of trouble. Now, Omicron is like now picking up a couple of yellow cards to key players on top. We may be okay, but we're kind of starting to feel at risk that we might go down to 10 players. And if that happens, or if that's a risk that it's going to happen, then we need everyone on the pitch to up their game in the meantime. And that's really upping your game in terms of boosters and in terms of antibody responses. We're not going to wait for the red card to happen. We're going to act decisively now. And we're asking everyone to up their game.
Charlie, we know the drill by now.
as a footballing analogy, how happy are you with this?
I think it actually started quite well, and it is a reasonably helpful way to look at it with, you know, we've had a couple of injuries, is like a setback, and we need people to step in. The problem for me is he kind of mixes the analogies. If he then talks about getting yellow cards, if he'd said, and now we've got a couple of suspensions, if the consistent message had been essentially, it's a squad game. And do you remember, you know, the sort of turn of the millennium when that became very in vogue, that previously it had been about 11, but now it's about you've got to have a squad, you know, the Mourinho two players in every position. I think if that had been a bit more consistent, it actually would have worked reasonably well and been quite helpful. But he sort of mangled it, I felt, with that yellow card thing.
Well, I read it. I read it as more of a mid-game situation, Dave. We've had to use a couple of our substitutes straight away. That was the previous situation. But now we've got a couple of yellow cards to key players. Now, on one hand, I thought, is this in danger of becoming a little bit too convoluted as a footballing scenario? And secondly, am I supposed to be worried here? Because I feel like if that happened in a game, I'd be all right. I'd be annoyed that my team have had to use two early subs. But that's already happened. The two yellow cards, I feel like, wouldn't fuss me too much. But there would be howls of derision from the stands.
Yeah, there'd be a slight concern in the back of your mind. But you'd hopefully trust those two players on bookings to walk the tightrope successfully for the rest of the game. I'd be more concerned if it were two red cards, or if there was an injury and we were down to 10 men because we'd already used all of our substitutions.
Red card would have been scaremongering, though. I feel like that's too extreme. So
yeah,
I mean, he's basically urging us all to show caution.
Yeah.
But the only thing that does concern me, Charlie, is that in this very scenario, we're heading towards outfield player having to go in goal, which would really worry me.
And we all know which member of the government that would be, don't we?
Yeah, or sort of just losing so many players, we lose to COVID 3-0 because it has to be forfeited.
Yeah, that is the other thing, isn't it? With all these analogies, what if we lose?
Yeah, I am detecting a kind of non-linear timeline to Jonathan Van Tam's virtual football game. I think we've established now that there is no clock on this.
Right,
it's a cup competition, isn't it? We're getting through round by round, but it's, you know, a real roller coaster.
Yeah, look forward to the next one. But that was probably the longest and most epic of all. Yeah,
Van Tam's going to do an open top bus parade when it's finally over.
don't trivialise him.
But also, who gets to decide? I mean, did Black Death win? Did we win? I mean, you'd probably say Black Death won that particular bout. I don't, like, what are the terms under which...
I think we've knocked that off its perch now.
Probably, but I don't know at what point can Van Tam sort of claim a victory, or is it just ongoing?
One for the World Health Organization, I think.
Yeah, the adjudication panel at the WHO.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get back to them. Right, next up, this is via Adam Simpson. Absolutely textbook for my sinsing on BBC Radio 2's Potmaster.
And your spare time, what'd you like to do?
Well, I'm an avid supporter of Southampton Football Club for my sins.
That ooh is amazing as well.
Dave, I mean, I was almost tempted to decry the addition of football club, but if you're indeed your football club only has one word, then that's kind of all right.
Yeah.
Did he?
I've already forgotten it. I'm having only heard the clip 5 seconds ago. Did Ken Bruce lead into him with football?
No. Just
or did
what
he just
like
volunteer? Right.
Time?
Okay. I mean, I think that's acceptable then, because I'm gonna have a Southampton supporter. I don't have any other teams, do they? But yeah, the Radio 2 audience. You've got to play to your audience.
How do you feel about Avid, Charlie?
Well, I think if you're being generous, you're saying he's being generous to the audience and giving them a bit of explanation. The other way of looking at it is that it's very much how a For My Sinser who's maybe not the biggest, you know, the kind of guy who caught the game on the radio. I mean, I don't imagine many Southampton fans talk about supporting Southampton Football Club. But this is an amazing For My Sins, because we actually got sent another For My Sins, which I enjoyed, which was Peter Jones on Dragon's Den, which I enjoyed because I always enjoy hearing people say For My Sins. But I think he talked about how I have made a few bad investments for my sins, which felt actually like probably how that expression is meant to be used, rather than the football self-effacing For My Sins way that we know and love.
Entirely. In the aftermath of this, someone sent me perhaps my favourite For My Sins of all time. Al Gunn. Heard a bloke on the train the other day say, "This is where I get off for my sins." Surely not an acceptable use of the phrase. Dave, that's superb. Why would anyone say that?
I don't know. Like,
is it
really
like zone five?
Yeah, undesirable place. Or is it like maybe a really nice place? Is he embarrassed about living in zone one?
Could be either. Or maybe, it could be his work, but I'm imagining it's his workplace that's, you know, in a bit of a shithole.
Yeah, or maybe he was on the other side of the carriage and had to sort of muscle his way through, and it was kind of a semi-apology for my sins. Like, really, sorry. That's not how it works either, is it?
There's no justification for it, is there? No matter how hard we try.
If I heard that live on a train, I would die. I would double over and die. So really hope that happens soon. Sorry to keep going over well-trodden ground, but I really have to do this. This is Sean Dyche versus Gary Cotterill, two stars of the Football Clichés podcast, trying to work out who wins this self-awareness classico.
You look a bit overdressed there, Sean.
Overdressed?
Yeah.
Are we really going to make a story out of the fact that I had a shirt on? Are we really? Is that the best we can do today?
Is that the best?
That we got a shirt on. I had a shirt on. Sorry, you know, do people ever think that I was out there for about 14 and a half seconds? It's a strange world we live in.
Long sleeve shirt, though.
Yeah, I'm disappointed in myself. I'll wear short sleeve next time.
A scarf on today. I can see Chris got a jaunty little red woolly hat.
So this is the best we can do then. So we are going to go down that road. Okay. Right, that's brilliant.
Are players allowed to wear snoots or gloves today? Can they have a rubber belt?
Come on, let's have something real. Come on.
What about training inside?
What about it? What would you like to know about it?
Like pitch lines, which you hardly ever use.
Okay, yep.
Which I'm told you hardly ever use. This is the information that I have. You know, I gather all the great information, Sean.
It sounds like it. We have under soil heating, both at turf, by the way, against what seemed to be another misconstrued moment in time. Both at Turf Moor and at the training ground here. So therefore, it's minimal need to use the indoor area. But if and when we decide to, then we do. Because you may be aware, but it's not the same as grass.
Wolves.
Love the wolves at the end. that really rounds it off, Dave. But if Sean Dyche is losing patience with the Premier League news cycle, then we are all in trouble, aren't we?
Absolutely baffling exchange there. You said sort of who wins this, and I can't really decide. There's a part of me that's sort of in Gary Cotterill's corner, because at least he's sort of... I begrudgingly admire his persistence. He refused to
play the game, Sean. Come on. Yeah, just bluff it off.
Just give me a little throwaway line and we'll move on. I'll move on to Wolves. But then also he probably went on a bit too long. You've got to read the room, and when you see Dyche isn't playing ball, just move on. But Dyche as well, just unnecessarily annoying. No one comes out of that well, do they?
But Dyche does have some... I mean, wasn't it last season where he stopped the presser, so he was like, why do we have some fun and we can talk about lookalikes?
Yeah.
I think he has... he has revealed that he does find it all quite tedious and likes to be the kind of, aren't we above this? I mean, obviously Gary Cotter as well was fresh from his party popper at the Arsenal press conference. So I don't know if Dyche had seen that and maybe went in with a bit of animosity or preconceptions, but what a week. What a week for Gary Cotterill.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I'm just, if we had to put kind of like a full-time score on this exchange, Charlie, what was it, a 2-2? I don't know. No one comes out with any massive credit, I don't think.
No, I think, I mean, obviously biased coming at it from Gary Cottrell's perspective, I guess. Yeah, score draw. Maybe Cottrell wins on points even.
Have you ever had any banter with a manager in a press conference, Charlie?
I've had one where I got caught out on Zoom because it was one of those where you all just put your hands up straight away.
Is that how it works on Zoom? Everyone sits there with their hand up.
Is it like a virtual hand, though?
The virtual hand function. And obviously, if you're in the room, you can, you know, wait until a couple of people have done it. My question was very much a third or fourth question. But if you don't do it straight away, you can get cut out. So I did it, and then I was the first question.
Oh.
And it just wasn't a first question. And it was basically, Spurs had just won. I asked Mourinho about a player who he hadn't been playing. It was Bergwijn. And he was just like, why are you asking me about that? We've just won this game.
Oh, God.
And I was kind of like, yeah, it wasn't really the first. Another time as well, I have left my hand up as the second manager's come in and the press officer's come to me for an opposition manager, and I've had absolutely nothing to ask. Right, we're going next to Charlie. And so thoughts on today's get? So vague in general.
We should come up with a little list of prepared templates, just for these eventualities. Yeah. Does that point feel like two dropped or one gained, Eddie? Yeah, just stuff like that. I help you, no problem.
Does it feel like something's building here?
Yeah, really good.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Right, let's do what we really are duty bound to do here. We've done enough laughing at clips of people talking. Let's talk about the language of football if we can briefly. Dave, Jared Paulson has written in something of the elephant in the football language room, as far as I'm concerned. He says, why is it such a linguistic pariah to say the word zero in reference to scorelines in football? And why does nil have such a stranglehold over describing a team scoring a blank, so to speak? For some reason, X team beat Y team 2-0 really rankles when you hear it. You'd sooner hear X team won 2-0, which is way more mealy to say. You even hear the dreaded noughts more often. How come?
I have one theory on this, that zero is an American thing.
Yeah.
And because I think there's a bit in Ted Lasso where he says something like, it was 0-0, and it's like, nil-nil. So I think that's partly that it's a kind of British, proud, don't bring your Americanisms to our sport kind of thing.
That is, do you think this is the driving force, Dave, is just anti-US sentiment? I mean, it's a very powerful sentiment in football, clearly.
That was my first thought as well. It's something that I can pretty certain that like an NFL commentator would say the Patriots are up 20-0 or something, and it just doesn't sit well.
How do you feel about zip?
No,
is that worse than zero?
Zip,
sub zero, zip,
zip.
Can't have zip.
Two zip would be good.
I wonder if anyone's ever has love ever been introduced.
Charlie would do it.
Yes, normally my domain. Two love, might try it.
I mean, I feel like nothing really shouldn't be that high up in the hierarchy, even allowing for its tradition. I mean, it was definitely like a Hugh Johns / David Coleman thing. So 1-0 back in the day, but I feel like I haven't heard nothing, Charlie, for a while.
Yeah, nothing has a bit more grandiosity, I think. It gives it, I don't know, it's like an exclamation point. It gives it a bit of occasion somehow.
Nothing.
Yeah, nothing. Mm. So it does feel like a bit of a throwback. Mm.
Well, sorry to Jared Paulson. Not a huge amount of clarity over this, other than simply to say that zero is just not, it's not happening, is it? It's just not happening.
Too American, I think.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it certainly doesn't roll off the footballing tongue in this country, so I can't see that situation changing very soon. Charlie, you'll enjoy this one. You are, of course, a student of Andy Gray's imaginary conversations in front of goal. Always enjoyed those, but an art form that seems to have faded a little since he stepped away from the gantry. But Alex Kebble has pointed me towards Alan Shearer's stint on Amazon Prime at St James's Park for Newcastle versus Norwich. And he looked like he was trying to revive it. Let's have a little listen.
McLean, Solis, and Sargent couldn't get a start of it. And Jamal Lewis shepherded away.
That was much better from Norwich, wasn't it? The ball down to Solis down the left-hand side. He gets to the touchline. He whips a fantastic ball into the far post there, and you're just expecting Sargent to say go on then, go ahead and tap it in. I think it was Lewis, wasn't it, at that far post that just stopped him.
A bold effort, Charlie, but I feel undermined by the fact that he implies that Sargent is talking to himself. You can't have an imaginary conversation with yourself, can you?
No, I don't think that works as well. I'm trying to think if Gray ever did that, like he says to himself. But no, it's not as powerful as those yeah, between either teammates, you know, he says to his teammate, do this, or he's the keeper saying to him. Thinking as well with these commentary, these sort of commentary pairings, I mean, Drury, it reminds me of like on old wrestling games where you could just pair whoever you wanted with whoever. It's like that's such a kind of, it feels like a real left field partnership.
Amazon are doing this a lot.
Like, yeah, I'm all here for it.
Yeah, Dave, we had Tiltley and Shearer, I think, last season during their kind of burst of December games, which really did feel like an artificial pairing. Obviously, it worked well. They're both very good tone.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best things about their coverage is the fact that, you do see these unusual partnerships, as you say. And just also, as I said to you last night while watching the game, great to have Peter Drury on a proper UK televised match. We don't, obviously on BT Sport, he does BT Sport and Champions League and stuff, but Premier League, we'd never really get him.
I keep having to fly out the country to hear his live commentary. It's very annoying.
Yeah.
Just to get my Drury fix. But actually, this is interesting though, Dave, because there are lots of kind of consistent commentary pairings and they travel around, you know, logistically it makes sense that they travel around and do games as they're like, I don't know, Beglin and Drury together quite a lot for their games. But do commentary pairings really need to gel? Like, is it like, it's not really like a central defensive partnership, is it?
I think there is a bit of that. But also, I think it's very easy to just slip into whichever partnership. You know, an experienced commentator will be fine with whoever they're put with. But they're definitely, I mean, John Champion and Ali McCoist were on the Leeds Crystal Palace game last night, and they've clearly got a well-established rapport.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
And that's how it works on major tournaments, isn't it? They have a pairing and they travel around together for that reason. Obviously, that's where McCoist and Champion, the 2018 World Cup, first emerged, and that was one of the subplots of the tournament.
But Shearer's gig on Tuesday night at St James's was a tricky one, Charlie, of course, because, you know, as a Newcastle club legend, and given the sensitivity that some fans have towards, you know, perceived bias, he did a very good job. And Newcastle is not necessarily a team to get carried away with, so I don't think it was a particularly difficult thing for him to not get too either way. But I really enjoyed... he got a lot of praise for his commentary. Someone on Twitter praised him for his unbiased commentary. And that person's bio read NUFC Crazy Geordie.
So he'd know of anyone.
The layers of bias, I can't work out.
But that doesn't surprise me in a way. Shearer is so earnest and professional. I would imagine he would say to him, like, to himself almost, like, all of that has to go out the window.
Just in case there was any danger of Shearer focusing too much on Newcastle, Dave, Timu Pukki plucked out of the bag such a Shearer-y type of finish.
Yeah.
In terms of technique, that there was never going to be any danger of Shearer not being able to get involved. It was such a Shearer-y goal to call.
It was. Shearer was purring upon seeing the replay of that. And I saw that Darren Huckabee tweeted Shearer at half time, saying, "I think you've been a bit harsh on Norwich's defensive performance there, Alan." And I think Alan quote tweeted him and had a bit of banter back with him, or whatever. But I don't know. Is that a subtle sort of hello from Darren Huckabee to the powers that be? I did play for both teams actually.
Yeah,
and I could probably be a bit more neutral, but I don't think Shearer was particularly biased. I thought he did a good job, but what I will say is that watching the game, you're just aware, even if he is straight down the line, you're just aware that he's Alan Shearer. There is a perception there. There is a slightly weird feeling that you expect, if I was a Norwich fan, I think that would just get my back up regardless of what he was saying. I'd just be annoyed that he was there without having, I don't know, Darren Huckabee or Grant Holt either side of him or something.
Well, I mean, in these times of bias sensitivity, Charlie, if we had to pick the most equally Norwichy and Newcastle player to have commentated on this game, I mean, what's your instinct?
Well, I mean, Fox is a good one, yeah.
Because
actually, Huckabee, I think people forget, was at Newcastle because he was there pretty early in his career, sort of before he emerged at Coventry and
did
Norwich.
Craig Bellamy play for Norwich?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. That's a good shout.
Steve Bruce.
Steve Bruce would have been
Mr. Manchester United.
Could have had Sebastian Bassong. That would have been an adventurous choice.
Yeah.
Your commentators at St James's Park, Peter Drury and Sebastian Bassong.
Sebastian Bassong was
out of the bag.
He was playing non-league football last season. He'd be a great person to have on.
Could have had Paul Dalglish. I'm just plucking these off my head. Yeah. I'm not just looking at a list of players who played. Des Hamilton, of course. Darren Huckabee. Tim Krul.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
he wasn't playing in the game.
Yeah.
Pops up Mike to the studio. Pops up to the studio to join us. Where do we feel, by the way, on the... I feel I've seen this so many times. And actually, as much as it should, as much as it is such a dad joke, because it's him, I'm fine with it. But the when Shearer's not there, Gary Lineker doing something like after Newcastle game, we've had a letter written in by an A. Shearer who had this to say on the game, which, if that's anyone else, it's so eye-rolly, but somehow...
I worry that we veered very close to that territory on this podcast before, but sort of listener Michael Cox writes in, but that's fine. It's
right,
fine.
Yeah.
Still technically true. Speaking of Shearer...
That's different. Those are actually true, aren't they? I mean, we don't make up that.
That's fine.
Oh, maybe we do.
Yeah, he does listen and he does enjoy it. Hi, Michael. Speaking of Shearer, I may have underestimated Dave, the fellow award-nominated football podcast, Match of the Day Top Tens. I thought it would have been... No, not particularly challenging podcast or anything like that. You know, something that just thrown together. But no, the latest edition was Michael Richards and Alan Shearer picking teams of their best players that they'd ever played with. Again, I have to say, on the face of it, not a massively compelling format. I didn't think I'd be intrigued. But this clip really did lift my soul. This is Michael Richards selecting his central midfield pairing of Yaya Toure and Patrick Vieira. And then Alan Shearer revealing who he had on the other side.
I might as well put it in.
My midfield might not be able to cope with this.
Hang on, let me put it in.
Think my forwards.
Your Toure,
of
right?
Of course, yeah, that is the one, Gary.
I thought it might be. So you're mid, you're two in the middle.
I've gone Rob Lee and Tim Shearer.
That's terrible! 20 odd caps for England. That's disgraceful being here.
That's so rude.
That's disgraceful. I hope he's listening to this.
How dare you call me that midfield?
I love that last bit, Charlie. The complete lack of diplomacy there. I just think it really does add to a podcast. I'm going to start listening to it now.
Yeah, and poor David Batty as well not getting in. I thought he was going to be a shoo-in. It does really work, actually. There's quite a lot of that... Mike Richards will laugh at Gary Lineker for being sort of ancient and his, you know, all the sort of stuff that, again, you'd think, I mean, we've been there before, but because it's those...
He's the perfect foil, isn't he? For those
It works really well.
Yeah.
And Shearer knew as well. Shearer knew.
Yeah, that's what was good as well. He assumed as that there's Vieira and Yaya.
20 caps isn't that much, Alan, really.
Yeah, true. And it was mid to late 90s. Yeah.
And Rob Lee probably had most of those. How many caps did Tim Shearer get?
I was
going to
say, is that caps combined?
Probably, yeah.
Lee picked up a few, didn't he, in the sort of friendlies leading up to Euro 96. Yeah. I feel like he was quite heavily involved. Him and Steve Stone.
Didn't listen further on, but I imagine Stuart Ripley is out there on the right-hand side just to really end Michael Richards completely. Elsewhere at St James's Park, Dave, a curious act of taking one for the team by Kieran Clark. Before we get into the real science of this, fair to say that it was too early to be taking one for the team?
Much too early. What was this?
8 minutes and 51
eight
seconds.
Eight minutes. Way too early. And there was, which they didn't mention this too much on commentary either, but there was, the fullback was not that far away either from covering round and probably getting a challenge or maybe putting Pukki off. And Pukki's not the quickest.
No.
It's a baffling piece of decision making.
Interesting that you say that. When you add in sort of extra layers of intrigue, like Pukki isn't the quickest. Now, Charlie, do you think as kind of external observers, we're putting a little bit too much faith in a footballer's ability to think about all these factors?
Stuff.
Well, he's not looking at Pukki going, well, he got 16 goals last season, so...
But maybe they are. I mean, I always find it amazing with these footballers because they've got to compute so many things in this, like, minuscule amount of time. So I do wonder if it's that, or whether it's your instinct takes over. And you think, fuck it. But yeah, take it for the taking one for the team. When you're then inflicting, 80 minutes playing with 10 men, you kind of wonder how big a favour you're really doing them. I mean, taking one for the team is kind of like you take a hit for their benefit, but I'm not sure how much they're going to be thanking you for that.
Well, for once, interesting that you say that. For once, we've got some data to back up the cliches vibe. You know, I mean, I think we stand up very well on our own kind of interpretation of what these phrases mean and where they're appropriate. But we've got some data to back this up from Michael Cayley, who confirms that it was way too early for Kieran Clark to commit a dog-so red card. He says The data says that you should wait until 60 minutes on average to take one for the team. Mm. And he produced this graph, which is all based on expected goals, Dave. The effect of a red card diminishes... The punishing effect of a red card diminishes over the course of a game. So if you got sent off in the 90th minute, then the chances of your team suffering from an XG perspective is almost zero, basically zero. If you get sent off in the first minute, it could be as much as 1.08.
Right.
So his graph, this little line, goes all the way down and finally intersects with the XG of a one-on-one goal-scoring opportunity, which is 0.47. So where those lines meet is statistically the point at which it's okay to take one for the team. Fantastic work.
And what minute is that?
It is around the 60% mark of a game. So that's around 55 minutes. But he's basically saying an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's
never
it.
Seen a spreadsheet take one for the team.
That's incredible.
That's good work. Yeah.
My favourite piece of football analytics I've ever seen. I'm prepared to embrace the community now, Charlie.
That is very handy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, one in the eye for the sceptics.
Yeah, absolutely. But at least we know now when we can use the phrase. After the game, Eddie Howe at that point, quite understandably, Dave, was furious on the pitch, like seething. The angriest I've ever seen Eddie Howe, quite rightly so. Kieran Clarke walking past him, all that kind of tableau of frustration. But after the game, with having Newcastle having salvaged a point, I thought to myself, I wonder if Eddie Howe is going to say that he can't fault the effort of his players.
It wasn't the ideal start to the game, that's for sure. I think that was a really difficult moment. So early in the match, to know that we were reduced to 10 men was tough. But I thought the players responded magnificently. I thought they gave everything. Can't fault any of them for the effort and commitment that they've given in the match.
Yes.
Now, I can confirm that you did text that to us in the WhatsApp group as soon as that red card happened. Called it.
Yeah, and I'm not taking a huge amount of glory for this. I mean, it's low-hanging fruit. But my point on this, Charlie, is I fear for Newcastle now. Because as soon as managers start not being able to fault the effort of their players, that to me is the tiniest, earliest relegation alarm bell.
Yeah, that's so true. I can't fault the effort of my players. Yeah, you do hear that as often as a team has thought maybe they were back in it and had won a few games, but then started losing again, and it starts to feel grimly inevitable.
You want to save that maybe, for at least April?
Maybe because they want to send a message to their employers, because effort is a reflection on them, isn't it? So it's a way of saying they're trying as hard as they can, they're just not good enough. Give me some better players.
But yeah, it's very much a tap-in for the football language expert there, Dave. Elsewhere at St James's Park, there was what feels like the inevitable close-up of Delia Smith in the stands.
What a player she was.
Well, whilst the world was preoccupied by her seemingly falling asleep up in the gods at St James's, during this clip, I just felt myself physically willing one of the commentators to say. I mean, maybe this podcast has just taken over me, but let's hear the clip.
Delia Smith.
Say it.
Who, alongside her husband, of course, Michael Wynne-Jones and Michael Folger.
Say it.
Celebrated 25 years at the helm of Norwich City.
Say it.
Last weekend.
Charlie, Alan Shearer did not say what a cook she was, by the way.
Yeah, a woman who knows a thing or two about her.
Yeah. McCoist would have said it. If Ali was on that game, he would have delivered.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Cooked for their recipes one or two times.
Never for me, Ali.
Oh, yes.
Need a few more games together for that. Yeah. trying to think, what would the knows a thing or two about...
Stirring, bringing a team to the boil.
Well, things are getting a bit spicy here, and Delia Smith there, who knows thing or two about making magic in the kitchen. Here we go.
Anyway, Wolves.
Wolves.
Speaking of Ali McCoist, though, he was otherwise engaged. He was at Elland Road for Leeds versus Crystal Palace, Dave. And, well, when you show Ali McCoist a great player in the stands, then you just have to let him go.
And you're not the only fine former Scottish international in attendance.
What a player.
Was a player. Eddie Gray.
What a player.
Embodiment of the great days at Leeds United. Oh, yeah. The 60s and 70s, and there's history all around us too, with the names emblazoned across the stands on all four sides of the pitch here.
One of my favourites there, John. Don't mind telling you.
The absolute deluxe serving of what a player there, Charlie.
I love it. I don't mind telling you at the end.
Yeah.
The
only thing it was missing was a by the way.
Yes. Mm. Really disappointed. Almost like he knew it was coming. But the delivery of what a player both times, Dave, really nice. Like,
what a player. What a player.
Oh. But my theory is the longer the what a player, the longer that someone says, what a player, the less they think that people know what a good player they were.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a real sweet spot because he's probably... the best what a player he was are when they think that the people wouldn't know it. So it's a kind of like, you know, a lot of you won't know this, but he... Oh. So he's in that sweet... Because a lot of viewers would have no idea, probably wouldn't have heard of Eddie Gray. I mean, I only really know him from that ill-fated spell when he managed Leeds when they got relegated.
What a player, by the way.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Speaking of semi-forgotten legends, incredible headline popped up yesterday, right out of the blue for me. I'm not in the game at all. Claudio Taffarel, Charlie, is joining Liverpool's coaching staff. It's very club cool, this. I almost felt like I was being charged 49p a minute just to read those words.
Claudio Taffarel joins Liverpool. Yeah, that's amazing.
Who do you think he would have played for in the 90s if he'd actually moved? Is it Middlesbrough?
I mean, yeah, Middlesbrough.
Probably Middlesbrough, isn't it? Yeah.
Middlesbrough's natural, yeah, it's because of the Brazilian thing. But I'm trying to think if anyone signed any flary keepers. I mean, West Ham signed Bernard Lamar, which at the time felt quite out there.
Who was the... Lionel Perez at Sunderland.
Lionel Perez,
yeah.
Peached
hair and the very short sleeves. The pioneer of the short sleeves. In
Isn't
the
it game. Him who gets chipped by Cantona in that for that famous...
Correct.
He's then stood... that he just stands around.
Do you know what this move reminded me of, actually, a little bit? Charlie, you'll appreciate this. It's when a famous tennis player gets like an old... out of nowhere, gets like an old coat. It's all of a sudden...
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we're like... Ivan Lendl started coaching Andy Murray or...
Michael Stick, what are you doing
here? Yeah, yeah.
Claudio Taffarel is a very Tennessee name, actually.
Yeah. Good on clay, Claudio Taffarel.
100%. But yeah, great to have Claudio Taffarel in you know, one of the least visible roles available. Still good to have him, Dave, in the Premier League. I feel like the Premier League has earned Claudio Taffarel, albeit 25 years too late.
Obviously, it's the same nationality as Alisson, the number one keeper. Mm. It's a bit of a... If this had happened when they signed Alisson, we brought in a specialist, a Brazilian coach to kind of keep him, be friends with him, and kind
maybe
of
maybe he's having trouble acclimatizing.
Yeah,
still.
It's a bit late for that, isn't it? Yeah.
Sign a really rubbish Brazilian player just to move in with him.
Which commentator is most likely to what a player he was about Claudio Taffarel? Because I feel that's quite niche. It almost needs to be a goalkeeper.
There aren't really many goalkeeping co-coms, are there? Really?
No, it's quite rare.
Rob Green. Rob Green would do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he might, yeah.
What a goalkeeper he was, by the way. We can't talk about the happenings in football this week without mentioning England 20, Latvia 0 in World Cup qualifying. Now, I don't think I even need to put the research into this, Charlie, because it was broadcast on ITV4. So if that counts as terrestrial / mainstream TV, do we think that this could be a record TV scoreline for a live game?
In this country, yeah.
Must be.
I can't think of anything that comes close.
There is, no way. England obviously got 10, yeah. But, no, I mean, yeah, and there's a whole... Yeah, there definitely has to be, because obviously the only sort of scorelines that even remotely you can even think of from the men's game, I don't know whether there's been any other similar scorelines in the women's game. Maybe there has. But, you know, is the of the famous... Australia.
I was going to say America, yeah. Samoa. That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
That was on. But that wouldn't have been broadcast
here. Yeah. After Neighbours.
Channel 5.
Go to Australia, America, Samoa.
Yeah, that's like the Emmerdale for Champions League equivalent, isn't it? Very good. Yeah, I would take that. But yeah, if anyone, in the very unlikely event that anyone has got an advance on 20-0 as the record score for mainstream TV live broadcast, let's hear it, because history's been made.
Looking at the scores on the BBC app just looks so weird.
Because they list the assists as well. So it's wow, it's so long.
For the first time in so long, because I was working at the time, and then I went over, because it got to like 9:30, I was like, I had no idea of what the Premier League scores were, and I went to BBC Sport because I was on my computer, which is quite an unusual way for me to find it when I go on Twitter or whatever. And I just saw the list of scores, and it was 20-0. I did have to be like, is that football? But then under it, it was 2-0. And I was like, that can't be any other sport. It was.
We've had a few 10s in recent seasons at various levels. I feel like I'm now desensitised to a 10, Dave. 20, it's all about 20s now. Although 20-0 doesn't belong to me at any sort of top level of football. There are very specific places that 20-0 should happen. And that is the FA Cup in the late 1880s and German or Italian clubs playing their first game of pre-season against like a really, really terrible regional side.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's
it is an NFL or rugby score, isn't it? It's just, yeah, it doesn't scan visually just to look at it. It doesn't look right.
Although I have to say, I'm not moved morally enough, Charlie, to start talking about, are these games really worthwhile?
Yeah, no.
Who are they benefiting?
But then someone's saying, but for those players... For those Latvia players. But do they even enjoy it? But I mean, the numbers are staggering because England had 86% possession and 64 shots.
Is that the Lionesses' share of possession?
They had 86. Very good.
Yes.
I mean, just the sheer time element to get 64 shots away, given that the ball's in play for about 64 minutes, isn't it? That's a shot a minute.
Yeah. 121 shots over the two games.
What I was thinking is... It's the sort of game, like having been to a couple of England women's games, you do notice that there are a lot of kids in the crowd often. Perfect game for a mum or dad to take their kid to is like maybe their first game, if they live locally or whatever, if they're getting into the game. I mean, if that was your first game, you're seeing a 20-0 for your first game, your expectations are just way out of line.
I think my first game was a 0-0. And I'm quite proud of that because it feels like there's quite a lot of kudos. But growing up and saying, yeah, my first game was 20-0.
Yeah.
England versus Latvia. Who was there? Everyone will say they're there. Anyway, David, thank you so much for joining us on the adjudication panel.
Thank you.
Charlie, same to you.
Thank you.
Have a lovely weekend, everyone. See you next time. Bye.
The Athletic.